Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays, 5:30 p.m. on YouTube. Check out my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Hey, this is our 300th episode, so if you've been listening that whole time, well, you have no idea how much I appreciate that. Enjoy the show! Everybody, I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to ANNCAST. Joining me today for a sort of an impromptu retrospective on the life, legacy, work of extremely famous and successful and rich mangaka Rumiko Takahashi. Dawn from the Anime Nostalgia podcast is here. You can find her show, animenostalgia.blogspot.com. Yeah, that's an M on the end of that. .com. Dawn is here. Dawn, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, it's always great to be here.
So I thought, I was thinking about Rumiko Takahashi a couple of weeks ago and was like, man, what, like, people don't really discuss her stuff that much anymore. Ranma One Half had kind of a renaissance not long ago because Viz was putting out those Blu-rays, but like, there was a lot of excitement around the first set and then it kind of dropped off and you didn't really hear anything about it after that. And it kind of feels like she's in some ways, she's faded into the background quite a bit, especially among American fandom. And I've been a fan since the 90s when Takahashi was fucking queen of all she surveyed. And Dawn, you are chiefly concerned yourself with moldy old anime. So I thought you would be the perfect guest to have on for this. And so my first sort of question is, like, when were you first exposed to Takahashi's work? Like, where did you see it first in your experience as an anime fan?
Okay, so like many people probably around our age, I saw it randomly at a comic store.
Mm.
And it's just like, oh, I think this is manga. Because that was around the time I was starting to get into manga.
Mm-hmm.
When manga was just taking very tiny baby steps of being like, translated into English and being a little bit more available here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I'm not really sure what this is, but the art style is really cute and like the covers were really colorful and very appealing to me visually.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I picked one up and I flipped through it and I was like, okay, this looks kind of cool. You know, I could get into this. And I bought like a couple of random issues. And, you know, back then it was like, good luck finding anything in order. I mean, they were numbered, but the numbering was like really confusing. It was
Yeah.
like part six, number four.
God, that made
mean?
No sense. What were you getting? Were you getting like a tankobon? Like, were you getting a full volume, or did they piece it out?
It was the, you know, back then
they did the floppies, right? The single issues.
Yeah, they did the monthly floppies. So it was like part six, number four, or you know, part. It was, pieced it out by, like, story arc, I think.
Right. And they named them. So it was, like, Ranma One Half had, like, Anything Goes, and then there was, like...
Well, that was the anime. The anime had, like, seasons that they named.
Right. And then the manga had, like... But so, they had the single issues that were, like you said, like, part 7, issue 12, and then...
Yeah.
The books, like, the collected volumes were, like, part 3, volume 2. So it was just... wildly confusing.
I can't even remember. It was so confusing to me, but like, you know, after a while I'd be like, okay, this one goes with this story and this one goes with this story, and like you'd had to kind of like Sherlock Holmes it together.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, okay, so yeah, this is the story,
yeah,
that's going on. And if you didn't know any of the characters, you had to work backwards and be like, okay, who's this person? I've never met this person before.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully Viz was really good about like at the beginning of each like floppy monthly thing, they would be like, this is what's going on. And these are vague descriptions of the characters, but you had no idea when they were introduced or anything like that. So I had to work completely backwards. And this was before like Wikipedia and stuff like
yeah,
that. So I couldn't
right.
just look it up. Like I had to be like, okay, who are these characters? Like, what are they all about? And that was kind of part of the fun, because I was just kind of thrown into this weird, wacky world of Ranma One Half, and like it was so Looney Tunes. I was like, what is this? I want to know more about this.
Yeah, totally. And like, you know, that episodic structure where it's like, oh, I've just picked up a random floppy of Lum. Like, you can do that with Lum because it's a sitcom and the stories are self-contained. Rama's kind of the same way. It's mostly the same way. Actually, yeah. Rama's extremely the same way, but you do kind of need to know about stuff because there's so much, like, genre crap in Ranma that, like, you have to know about things later on, and, like, there'll be callback gags and, like, a character will be able to do something and you're like, I don't understand why that character, who is the Hawaiian guy, you know, that kind of thing.
And some of the little story arcs went for, like, multiple chapters.
Yeah,
so
yeah. But it would
super self-contained. Like, with Lum, a lot of them were really episodic, where it was one chapter, one story, that's it.
Right, yeah. But, like, Maison Ikkoku, that would just be the end of it. Like, I have... Well, okay, these two...
Yeah, that one was harder. Like, I had to actually... When I picked up a random floppy of that, I was like, oh, I have no idea what's going on. And this seems like a much more serious story.
Yeah.
So I had to wait for the books to come out because I was like, I can't read this out of order. I'm not going to know what's going on.
I like those. I do really have like a fondness, a soft spot for the pastel Viz covers from those days. Like the colors that they use.
They're so good.
They're really good. I like that like a lot. That aesthetic is really cool. It looks good. It's very 80s. And,
it really is, because like, I think they started doing Urusei Yatsura. Well, they called it Lum. Urusei
the Return Yatsura. Of Lum, they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they started it in 1989.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that 80s aesthetic that carried over even into the 90s.
And it didn't run that long. Like, they didn't publish that much of it. From what I understand, like, it's not that, there's not that much Lum published in English, as far as I know. I have a few volumes, like, you can still get some of this stuff, speaking of which, if you're looking for it, they reprinted Ranma and Maison. You can get those, I think, at, like, Barnes & Noble still. And, like, Amazon has it.
Technically, Maison is out of print.
Is it out of print again?
they haven't done, like, the last print they did, oh, shoot. I'm sorry if you're hearing...
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's okay.
Okay. There's like a dog going crazy outside.
It's all right. We're used to pet noises on the show. It's okay.
There's the non-flopped version of Maison Ikkoku. They did in like, I think, the mid-2000s, early 2000s. And that's it. And that's out of print.
But you can get them. Like, they're not that expensive. Like, you can get like a lot of this stuff for like $5 or $6 a volume. It's not that hard to get hold of.
Except, like, there's a couple of random volumes that will just randomly go for tons of money for no reason. And I think it was because those ones were printed in low volumes for some reason.
That's usually the reason, yeah. That's usually how it goes.
The old flopped ones you can find for dirt cheap almost everywhere.
Yeah,
like every used bookstore always has some that I go to.
Yeah, and you know what? If you want to flip, if you just want to see some of this stuff yourself, like if you're hearing us talk about it and you haven't seen it for yourself, if you find some of those old flopped ones, first of all, it's a little glimpse back into the past of the way we used to consume this stuff.
They used to hand letter those things.
They did.
Which is insane.
And I kind of love the old scripts, like the old translations. Like, the old translation of Maison Ikkoku had Godai studying Spanish.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Yeah, up in his room. It's funny.
Yeah, they were first released at a time when they were trying to appeal to a wider audience than just, like, the tiny, you know, anime fan market. Yeah. So they were like, okay, let's make things a little bit more westernized. Let's, you know, give something that's a Japanese reference, some sort of frame of reference for an American reader.
Yeah, it's heavily localized and, like, changed. It's the exact kind of thing people bitch about nonstop now if they see it. But they're full of it. Like, those translations are full of that stuff.
That's why for years people thought okonomiyaki was Japanese pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Wow, because they reference okonomiyaki constantly in Takahashi stuff.
Okonomiyaki chef, so that's her specialty. And they had to describe it as Japanese pizza, like, all the time, which I get, but at the same time, I'm like, that's not really what it is.
I remember being confused by Yakiniku in Maze on a Koku, how they would refer to it, and like how special it was supposed to be that they had meat, like that they could afford beef. Yeah, that stuff always was like that cultural stuff, because it's sort of weirdly glossed over. And like kind of half mentioned, and you only get like a you get a really kind of an odd understanding of Japanese culture, getting it through that rough sort of, you know, early like 90s filter.
Yeah, I'd forgotten in that first volume of Urusei Yatsura when Ataru meets Lum's father, you know, he's supposed to look like an oni, like from Japanese mythology. So he was like, oh my god, like, you monster. And he starts throwing soybeans at him, which is like a thing in Japanese culture that they do at Setsubun. But in the comic, they were like, oh, you monster, I get it. Ha ha, trick or treat, have some candy.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's throwing candy at him. And I was like, okay, I get that. I get why they made that change. Because who at a comic shop in the 90s was going to know what Setsubun was?
I mean, the answer is put a translation note in there. And the appeal of it being, you know, sort of unknown is what kind of sells it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, people want it to be authentic, you know. It was full of that. It was full of that kind of stuff. And so... what year was that when you first started encountering those things?
Oh, gosh. I want to say, like, 93 and 95, somewhere in there.
I pinpointed it. So it was my sophomore year of high school, so it would have been 1996. Mm-hmm. And the kid behind me in my history class reaches around and hands me the very first Lum Perfect Collection that Viz ever put out. That like kind of thick one with the really cool cover has like a great cover.
I still have that. Yeah.
Okay. So like, I have to buy one of those. I've been like searching for one. It's secondhand.
They're so hard to find.
Yeah.
Now.
They're really hard to find, but that shit is like a horcrux for me. Like like I had never read manga or watched anime really before he handed me that. It like led to my whole career, but like I devoured that comic, and it felt a little risque because there's a little bit of nudity in it, you know, and it's like, it's offbeat, it's black and white, it doesn't look like American comics, and it's like, oh, these are really interesting kind of funny stories that seem to treat the audience like it's a sitcom, but it treats the audience like, I don't know, you're an adult a little bit, like it had an appeal to it. And so from there, it took off. But I only ever liked Lum and Maze on a Koku. I have never liked Ranma 1/2.
Oh, really?
Ever. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But
okay.
Back then in the 90s, I was really into Lum, really into Maze on, and my anime club was obsessed with Maze on a Koku. The old guys that ran the club, they hoarded those tapes like they were gold, and they showed it, you know, a couple episodes a week. And they acted like, I remember the guys in my anime club acting like Maze on a Koku was the greatest romance ever told. Like, the most real, the most raw, like, just the realest shit, man. And, like, you know, at the time, there was something very special and romantic about Maze on a Koku. And I think if that's, like, the first sort of rom-com dramedy that you're exposed to, it's a really good story, and it's like really well written and really snappy, it's very like easy to get into. So I definitely drank the Kool-Aid on Maison for like a long time. It wasn't until it stretched on and on forever and I found myself getting like horribly frustrated with the characters that
the anime was way longer.
Yes, significantly worse. Yeah, we'll get into that too. So that was kind of the way of it back then. Like, Rumiko Takahashi, it's kind of hard to understate or to overstate the amount of influence and popularity that she had, especially in the 90s. Ranma 1/2 was gigantic. Like, it was, I mean, I don't want to say it's like the Attack on Titan of its day, because you can't really, like, it's not particularly comparable. Like, giant media successes in the 90s did not look like what they look like now. It was as close as you could get to an evergreen success story that, like, millions of people or thousands of people liked. back then. Mm-hmm. And it was a surefire seller.
In Japan, it was definitely millions.
It was. Definitely. In Japan, it was gigantic. I'm just talking about my exposure to Western fandom and its importance in Western fandom. But it was gigantic back then. Was that your experience too? Like, I mean, how much time in an average like anime club meeting would you spend just talk like where the focus was some Takahashi thing?
Well, the anime club I went to at first in high school was like they seemed like dead set on not showing Rumiko Takahashi things, and I've never really figured out why. And it always was kind of weird to me because I was like, but everyone likes Rumiko Takahashi stuff. And I think they were just like guys that were kind of like, well, that's sort of entry level for babies stuff.
Oh,
you know?
They got something to prove. Yeah,
I guess.
They got something to prove. They're only into the man anime. Yeah.
The man anime.
Yeah. Man.
But when I took over later, I actually showed some Rumiko Takahashi things. Like, I think I showed the first two Ranma movies.
Yep, and you gotta show Big Trouble in Nikon Lawn China.
And
Farewell My Concubine.
A little bit of Urusei Yatsura and a little bit of Maison, just to sort of give people like a taste of what they were.
Yeah.
And they always came with, you know, lots of praise, like, oh, that was really good, I really liked that.
Yeah. Right.
So it was a general crowd pleaser, and usually when people saw like another one of Rumiko Takahashi's work, they were like, oh, that's from the lady that did like Ranma or whatever, right? You know, the style was recognizable.
Yeah.
So it was usually like, oh, that makes me interested in that and I want to see more of it. But yeah, when I would meet other fans or like go to conventions, like people were very much like, do you have any Ranma things or do you have any Urusei Yatsura things? Like, people were clamoring for the stuff, like they couldn't get enough.
I remember being a huge deal that they made an official plush Pichon available. The Ryoga turns into that pig, right?
Yes.
And that was like the mascot. And, like, getting a plush one of those was a deal. Like, that was a thing.
Oh, I wanted one of those so badly when I was a teenager.
I got the Cabot instead, the Tenchi. Everyone had that, the Ryooki. Yeah.
Well, Pioneer, like, cranked those out. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
There were so many of those. I finally did get a Pichan plush when, I think it was, like, a couple years ago. They did a few plushes for the Ranma like anniversary in Japan, right. And I finally got one. I was like, I finally got my Pichan.
Yeah.
and it looks way nicer than the old one because it's more modern. So the technology for making plushies has greatly improved over the years.
but I think you can make the argument that Ranma was kind of it's ever present in 90s fandom, always in the background somewhere, always a standby, always playing in the video rooms. There's always a lot of merchandise available. Like, in that way, I guess it is kind of a lot like, you know, Attack on Titan or whatever, where it's everywhere. It will be there for years and years and years, just in the background, quietly selling merchandise. You'll see a few cosplayers, you know. It might not be the juggernaut that it once was, but it will always be there in the background. And it was like that for like a decade with Ranma, probably longer.
And it totally permeated like not just like the Rumiko Takahashi fandom, but it trickled down into like other aspects of fandom. Like the word glomp came from Viz translations of Ranma and Urusei Yatsura.
Jeez.
They used that for the aggressive hug sound, and that got put into fan fiction. And that trickled down to people who had no idea what Ranma was, but they used that because it sort of became like a fan term. Like, it permeated the lingo.
I mean, if you asked, like, if I were being, I don't know if obtuse is the word here, it just seems to me like also fan behavior in general, like, that to me, like, yeah, right. So Glomp came out of Ranma 1/2. I feel like also there was a certain fan attitude that came out of that was kind of hyperactive and manic and yelly and, like, you know, I know that's just teenagers, but, like, that's the way all the characters in manga act all the time. And because they were doing things like hug attacking each other, it always felt like it had at least a slight influence on fans. on fan culture.
I would have to agree, because it's kind of like you were saying earlier, it's kind of like drinking the Kool-Aid. Like, you start watching a thing and it gets like so, you get so into it when you're young, you're just like, ugh.
Yeah.
And then you just want to have that be like in every aspect of your life. So you start like acting weird.
And you can read endless chapters of Ranma. Sit like it's 40 volumes or something like that. Just endless sitcom chapters of that thing.
So, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's kind of prehistory. And again, it's hard to if you wanted to buy a wall scroll, chances are there would be a dozen Ranmas and then a bunch of other stuff, right?
Like, oh, I had like probably 10 to 20 of those like bootleg posters.
Oh yeah, the 11 by 17 kind of ones.
Yeah, those laminated ones that you found in like every bootleg anime store.
Yeah, Jacob was going through a pile of them on the show a couple of weeks ago.
I know, I thought, and I was like, oh my god.
If it had been that Sailor Moon illustration from like S, and that Ranma, that cast shot of Ranma, there's a piece of beach key art from Ranma that was on like a million different posters and wall scrolls.
I had several posters that were like swimsuit ones.
Swimsuits and wedding, like Akane in the wedding dress and Ranma in the tuxedo. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I still have one of the swimsuit posters. I have an old like bootleg poster like hanging up over my desk because I'm like, it's so cute. I can't get rid of this.
Well, that's like pure memories now. Like, you look at it. Yeah, it's a bootleg, but it's not like, hey, this is bootleg. It's like, no, this is like a cherished like memory from my youth.
From young weeaboo days.
Yeah, of walking into a store and having $5.
Yes. Indeed.
Yeah. So that was kind of prehistory. After that, so there was Ranma that was big for a long time, and then I would say it was quiet for a while, and then Inuyasha came along, and I never got into Inuyasha either.
I was going through some of my old manga and comics to sort of like prep for this, you know. And I found my old issue number one of the floppy Inuyasha of Fatal Fairy Tale.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, that's right. I bought like a shit ton of these.
Really?
Before they started putting it out, not flipped in like the actual good volumes. Like they put it out like Ranma. They put it out in those floppy monthly comics.
Right.
And it was a big deal because it was starting only, they were releasing it only about a few months after it started in Japan.
Yeah.
So like everyone was like, oh my God, this is like the newest thing she's working on. It's so cool that we're getting it so fast, you know, which was like almost like half a year after it started, we got the first issue.
Yeah.
Which, like, back then, that was, like, crazy soon.
That was like, whoa, it's like we're getting it right at the same time. Like,
yeah.
Of course, now we would get it exactly at the same time.
Yeah, now with Simulpub, like, oh my gosh, now that seems like a joke.
Right, yeah. But back then, that was a big deal. And I remember the complaining about the fact that it was flipped, and people were, at that point, were asking for unflipped. And they were upset that they were releasing it in singles. I do remember that very distinctly. Because Inuyasha came out in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s. And around that time, culture was changing a bit. So I think if you could probably go back and find some of those old arguments on the internet in certain places.
Oh, probably.
I'm sure you could. Yeah. But I never got into Inuyasha. I dated a girl for a long time that was really into it, which is an incredibly like fucking scrub story of, you know, boring otaku from the late 90s definitely had a girlfriend that watched a lot of Inuyasha. Like, that was like the standard thing back then. So I've seen plenty of it, and I remember being just as frustrated by it as I have been with her other stories. But, here's the thing. So, like, how do you feel about Takahashi's, like, horror work? Which, there's plenty of it. She's done, like, Mermaid's Tear and Mermaid's Scar, and, like, there's all the Rumic World stuff where they're, like, horror anthologies, like, one-offs that are intended to be usually in the horror genre. Like, do you read that stuff? Are you into it? Because I find, like, not a lot of Takahashi fans, usually they pick one or the other.
I like some of it. Like, I actually really liked the Mermaid Saga.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting. Of course, I got into it like back in the 90s and stuff when, you know, the idea of like mermaids being like evil demons and stuff sounded really fresh and interesting. And I didn't realize until later, I thought she had made up that idea. Mm. Like I thought that was completely a Takahashi invention. But no, if you read up on it, there's other stories where that's a whole thing. So she just kind of built up on that. And I just thought it was really interesting, and I hadn't read a ton of her Rumic World stuff yet at that point, so I was really into it. I still enjoy it. I don't think it's as strong as some of her other stuff, but it's nice to see her try different things.
Yeah.
And a lot of it does work.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a lot of it's perfectly fine. I just like personally don't think that I prefer her illustration style for comedy. Like I just think it fits it better. I think her comic timing is better than her horror timing.
Sure.
And like she's just better at writing sitcoms. And the horror stuff I found kind of
100% agree on that. Yeah. I mean, I really like horror to begin with, so that might be why I was like, ooh, this is interesting to me.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, for that I'm gonna read like Junji Ito, you know, I'm not gonna read Takahashi.
Right.
Like and see the thing is like so what Inuyasha was like just mixing here's my sitcom stuff, here's my horror stuff, let's put them together, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit more horror and action than it is anything else. And it had this endless premise, which is we have the Shikan jewel, it shatters into a billion fucking pieces, and there's going to be an episode where we don't even find one piece.
That was my problem with it, because at first I thought, oh, this is going to be like a horror thing with like some comedy in it, that seems like it could be interesting. But as time passed, like after I think I stopped at around 3 or 4 volumes, I was like, is this going to keep going? Like is this going to be another like Urusei Yatsura where it's like endless volumes of a thing?
Yeah.
And then it ended up being longer, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah. So, and I remember I would come into the room and my girlfriend would be sitting there watching Inuyasha, and all I would say is, did they get all the jewel shards yet? No. Did they kill Naraku yet? No. Alright then.
Yeah.
See you in 10 years.
It was really frustrating because it just felt like it was spinning its wheels.
Yeah. Well, I think that like that's all her, it's gotta be like her editor, I assume, in some cases. Like, look, just make it go forever. But she's incredibly powerful. So, I wasn't able to find anything or read anything specifically about her relationship with her editor and like how much power she has over how long her stories go, because she talks about her editors and stuff in this sort of playful kind of fashion. But I didn't see anything on whether or not, like, look, I would have ended this 20 volumes earlier, but I wanted it to go for literally forever.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I like a lot of the characters, and I like her use of like traditional Japanese like monsters and themes and things like that. But it just got to the point where you could literally turn on the anime at any random episode, and it was the same episode over and over and over again.
Yeah, well, like, one of the other things is, like, it's the same. So there are jokes, but, like, a lot of Takahashi stuff, it's the same, like, 3 jokes over and over and over and over and over again. Inuyasha, like, Kagome is kind of bitchy to Inuyasha. Inuyasha's an asshole. Kagome punishes him by, like, saying sit, and then his body like crashes to the ground, and that's it.
one of the guy
Moroku, is that his name, he's a pervert,
right.
And that's it. That's the joke. Yeah, so,
and
like,
he's a cute little mascot character.
I feel like the problems that I had with her previous stuff were exacerbated in Inuyasha and made a lot worse by not only the format but by the fact that it was then mixed in with this horror stuff that I wasn't too fond with. Just for me personally, it was like kind of the opposite of what I would want from Takahashi. But it was gigantic. It was enormously popular. That show created a generation of fangirls. I'm convinced of it. Not,
oh, for sure.
Maybe not in the same, at the same level as like a Sailor Moon, but like, I mean, in terms of creating American Fujoshi, like, Sesshomaru strolled out, and suddenly
I was totally into the Sesshomaru. Yeah. I was like, yes, I'm here for this.
Yep. Yeah, she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
But I wasn't,
I mean,
you know.
I I had times where, like, I had a job at a video store for a while, and, like, just one of my young coworkers, she was, like, maybe 15. Like, I guess she could just smell it on me. She was like, "Do you like anime?" And I was like, "Oh, no.
You're going to bring up Inuyasha?"
And it was Inuyasha, but she could never say it properly, so it was always Inuwasha.
Oh, that's weird.
And she would ask me all these questions about Inuyasha all the time. And it was kind of cute because, like, she was only watching it, like, on TV. So she had no idea about, like, you know, what happens in the manga or what happens after a certain point, because she was watching, like, repeats or something.
Yeah, it was on Adult Swim, like, forever.
Yeah. So it was really interesting to see it through her eyes, because to her it was all new and amazing and wonderful and fantastical, and that kind of made it a little endearing to me for a while. And like I said, I still like a lot of those characters. It's just that I could not go, I mean I was getting to the point where I was like, I am getting too old to watch, like, so many episodes of a thing.
Yeah,
I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it's 56 volumes, Inuyasha. It's 56 volumes. That is close to 20 volumes. That's close to 20 volumes longer than Ranma 1.
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple friends that they bought every single volume of that thing, and, you know, hey.
Good, more power to them. I mean, like, if I could...
Sticking with it.
If I could have every single volume of Yuri's Yatsar, I would have it. I would definitely have the whole thing. If I could have all of it, I would. Now, that doesn't mean I would have read the entire thing. But I would, like, that would be neat to have all of it.
I have almost all of them in Japanese.
Wow. Now, see, that's cool.
And I have a bunch of them in English, like most of the ones that came out here. But
yeah, I've only got a few. I need to go. I was at Book Off, like, last week and picked up some that they had laying around. But I need to get some more of the old translated ones.
If you wait long enough, you'll probably find all of them that way.
Yeah,
I bet you.
More than likely. It seems to reason. Like, they show up every now and then. That's Inuyasha, and, you know, that was huge for most of the 2000s, I would say.
Oh, yeah,
It started kind of petering off there, like in...
You couldn't throw a stone without hitting an Inuyasha or Kagome cosplayer.
Yeah, and again, the merchandise was everywhere, much in the same way that it was for Ranma 1/2. So, like, Sesshomaru wall scrolls absolutely dominated anime convention dealers' rooms for years.
Yeah.
Like, it was everywhere. Just everywhere. A ton of merchandise. People with those necklaces, and... Yeah, Inuyasha cosplay was, like, a huge thing, but now that I think about it, I have not seen one in, like, 10 years.
Yeah, I think I probably have seen one. It's just that I'm so used to seeing them. You don't even see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even see it anymore. It's in the background of your mind.
Yeah, like, it reminds me that, like, I remember seeing one not that recently, probably like 3 or 4 years ago, and being like, is that an Inuyasha? It's like, I say the same thing when I see a Rōnin Kenshin.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you want to go up and be like, well, when did you start reading this? Like, you know, that kind of thing.
A million years.
And then they're like, on a scan site yesterday. So Inuyasha came, Inuyasha kind of went. It is one of the few strange cases where they actually picked up the anime years later and finished it out in like 26 episodes. Is Inuyasha the final act. That was a couple years ago, and it was kind of a dry fart. Like, it kind of came and went. No one really cared. It came out on DVD in, like, one set, and people were like, yep, sure is the end of Inuyasha. And, like, they didn't really seem to care that much.
Yeah, I had a few friends that were really excited about it, but, like, on a whole, I didn't see a whole lot of people talking about it. There didn't seem a lot of buzz about it or anything.
Yeah, no, it seemed like something they were doing more out of, like, obligation. Like, well, this can make some money, so we better go ahead and make it. We never finished the original anime. You know, much like what happened with Ranma 1/2, which never finished. And Kitty, it was like, what was the story with that? Like, Kitty went out of business due to, like, internal bullshit. Like, Ranma destroyed that studio. Or something like that. Because they animated most... Kitty Media, that is a different company. Kitty Media sold a lot of hentai in the United States back in the 90s. Kitty Films, which is the animation production studio.
That's what I thought you meant, but I was going to...
Kitty Films handled a lot of the... They were terribly famous animation studio for a long time, and they handled like all of Yurisu Hatsura along with like Studio Dean, I think. Mm-hmm. And who else Definitely. Worked on that? Piero, right? Didn't they also work on that?
Piero worked on Yurisu Hatsura, I know for sure. I don't know about Ranma.
I don't know about Ranma.
They might have. But
I know they worked on Maison as well. Like, those studios both, I think, all worked on the first couple adaptations. And then Ranma was, like, mostly a Kitty Media joint, and then the Kitty Films joint. And, it didn't go so well. But, and they haven't finished the Ranma anime, which...
No.
You would think after that, I feel like that anniversary was like, let's see. Like, let's see how well this merchandise sells. Let's see how well these Blu-rays sell. And if there's enough interest, we'll go back and reanimate some stuff. But I don't think they ever did.
That's what I was wondering, too. I was like, is this a build-up for something?
Yeah, because lately, that's just speculation.
We've been seeing a lot of resurgence of like, hey, remember this old thing? Here's a bunch of merchandise you can buy for it now.
Yes, yeah.
And because like,
which I appreciate.
Sakura went through like that, too. And now all of a sudden we're getting new Cardcaptor Sakura anime.
There we are. I'll see that next week, I think. That'll be weird. That's going to be fucking weird. Yeah. Sitting in 2017 Anime Expo waiting to get into the premiere of a Cardcaptor Sakura thing. That's going to be strange.
Yeah, be like, did I just time travel to
it's 2001. Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah, totally.
So I was actually thinking, like, are they gonna do like a thing? Like, they did a live action movie a while.
Right. Like, it was not good though, from what I understood.
I mean, there were parts of it I thought were cute, but on the whole it was kinda like, you know.
I heard it wasn't good. That's what I, all right.
it was really, really hokey.
Yeah.
But like I found it like a little endearing. Like, bless them, they tried.
Yeah.
But it was just really like they had to really condense a storyline to make a thing out of it, and it was kind of just jumbled and weird. So I was thinking like, well, maybe they will do an anime thing, but then they never did, and I was like, okay, I guess. I don't know. Like, maybe they were like, well, the Inuyasha one didn't sell very well, so maybe we won't. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. None of the, like, the resurgence, when they bring it back, it doesn't really, those people are like, oh, I remember this fondly, I'll buy some trinkets, but they're not necessarily interested in, like, reinvesting in the story or the characters, it doesn't seem. Like, that's kind of the impression that I get from a lot of people.
It really feels like it to me, because, like, they put out a whole bunch of Urusei Yatsura stuff recently, and, like, I feel like they could legitimately do a new Urusei Yatsura thing.
Yeah. I like, would really love, like, a lavishly animated movie that was mostly an aesthetic exercise. That would be great. I would love that.
Someone on my Twitter friends list, I cannot remember who, once suggested doing, like, an Osamatsu-san-style show of Urusei Yatsura now.
Hmm.
And I was like, that would be really cool if they got the right people.
Yeah.
I think.
That would be great.
But it would really have to be, like, the right people.
Yeah, I would really love that. You know, I would be totally down for a Lum thing. Like, just bring it back. That would be... Just give it a shot. Like, it's okay if it sucks. Yeah. Just give it a try. You know, just, I understand. Like,
a few vignettes, like, every episode. Just, like, you know, little gags and stupid shit. Yeah. I would be all for that.
Yeah.
I think that would work way better than, like, a new Ranma, personally.
Yeah, I don't think Ranma is aging all that well to begin with. But... So let's get into this. So, all right. So Inuyasha came and went. They did the thing. And now Takahashi's out there with this thing called Rinne that I have seen the first episode of the anime adaptation and said, nope. And read the first, like, two chapters of the manga and said, nope. And from what I understand, that is, like, most American fans, like, don't seem to care about it that much at all. It seems like it's just not particularly successful.
When Viz started putting it out, they had like a preview of like the first couple of chapters or something on their website, and I was like, ooh, I'm gonna check this out, like, maybe I will like it, who knows. And I read the first few chapters and I was just like, what? I just remember thinking, what is this? Like, I don't...
Well, it's like Inuyasha. It's like almost exactly like it, except the boy is not a demon thing anymore, but it's the same, like, kind of bitchy girl, kind of shitty guy, and they have supernatural adventures together that can be wrapped up inside of 22 minutes, the end. Like, that's pretty much it. And there's, like, a sidekick that kind of looks like the fox thing from Inuyasha. Mm-hmm. Like, and it just seems like it's like, well, this stuff is kind of popular, right? Like, I don't know. It did not grab me at all. And, like, I don't know anyone reading it. Like, none of my friends who love Takahashi stuff care about it at all.
Like, I literally only know, like, two people that are... They aren't reading the manga, but they're watching the show because I think it's on Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's really cute, and there's a lot of references to other Takahashi things that the animators hide in there. And I'm like, hey, well, that's cool,
yeah.
But, like, I need more than that.
I feel like we wound up having to cancel our daily streaming reviews for that because no one was reading them.
That doesn't surprise me because
maybe I'm wrong on that. We haven't had to cancel too many of them, but that was one where it's like you look at the numbers for the people reading it, and it's like, well, I don't like where you know, ANN's a small company. Like, I'm not sure that the expenditure that we're making on this is enough to warrant this kind of traffic. Like, that's sort of the decision you have to make. So far as that goes, like, I just don't know that many. It doesn't seem like that big a hit, but at the same time, it's got 34 volumes and has been running for almost 10 years.
Yeah, that actually surprises me. I cannot believe it's been 10 years since that started. Yeah.
And it has a circulation of 3 million compared to her previous successes, which have, like, circulations of 45, 53, 25 million. Like,
yeah.
So in Japan, it's not anywhere near as big a deal, but mm-hmm. I think these numbers of all, like, obviously the market has changed a tremendous amount, but I would say that in and of itself just seems like a particularly uninspired Takahashi joint. And you know, if she does something after it, I'll be excited to see whatever that is.
Yeah, I would be really curious to see if she goes back to, like, maybe straight up comedy or something.
Yeah.
Instead of this whole, like, I need to follow this shonen manga formula some more. Let me just keep doing this.
Yeah. You guys like this, right? Bitchy girl, kind of a shitty guy. There's a little sidekick dude. There's some demons and stuff. You like that. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what it feels like.
That's what the kids are hip to, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I've read interviews where she's said that she would never run out of stories to tell because she has so many in her head. But that was, like, 20 years ago. And I'm like, what happened to those cool ideas that you said you had?
I think we've seen most of them. I think we've seen them at this point. That's not a knock on Takahashi. This is somebody who's created some of the most lasting and venerable stories of our time. Like, one person only has X number of surefire hit ideas. Like, you know, it's okay. Like, I'm not bagging on her. I'm just saying, like, the latest one is kind of a, all right.
Yeah, and it's, you know, statistically, the more you put out, the less, like, really, really good ones you're gonna have. You're only gonna have, like, some hits. They can't all be amazing.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So, okay, here's what I want to know. What is your... Let's give our top two favorite Takahashi stuff. I mean, mine's super obvious. My favorite is Islam, and then Maison is, like, right after that. And I would put them pretty close to each other, but I have a deep love for Lum. Like, I just love the design of it so much. And the characters and the sitcom situations, like, I don't really get that sick of the jokes. Like, they are kind of the same jokes over and over again, like all of her stuff. Like, Ataru is a dickhead pervert, and Lum punishes him for being a dickhead pervert. But everyone's just kind of casually sort of... I don't know, there's an attitude to that I find really funny, and kind of, there's an innocence to it, and a, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a ramshackle comedy that I find really, really funny. Like, I love his interactions with Mendo. Like, Mendo really makes me laugh.
Oh, yeah. Mendo's great.
Yeah, well, he makes me laugh a lot. Like, the comics made me laugh. Like, I was going back reading the comics, and, like, it's still, like, it's so charming and cute, and, like, the design is so good, and, like, her comic timing is flawless in those comics. Like, it's perfect.
It really is.
And I think that's what she's largely famous for, is her comic timing. It feels like that's what really makes all this stuff work. Because panel to panel, the gags are just flawless. Like, it's great. And, you know, not every story is funny, and a lot of the jokes kind of fall flat now and stuff. And a lot of it is just kind of basic cartoon slapstick and Ataru, you're a pervert. You know, that's it. But, you know, it, I... it's venerable. It's like the Flintstones. Like, you know, it's just there. And if you're kind of, if that particular ancient thing appealed to you, it'll sort of appeal to you forever. I don't know. But yeah.
Well, you have to remember that these came out so long ago. That Lum came out so long ago that now after Lum, you know, Urusei Yatsura, that was the thing that inspired like a whole new generation of like that sort of comedy.
Yeah, right.
Like it was super, super, super influential. So it might seem old and kind of outdated to younger fans, but that's because they've seen it already.
Yeah.
Repeated ad nauseum, well, in like every like other thing that came after it, basically.
I feel like if you watch Lum now, it's kind of like, it's such a throwback. Comedy just doesn't act like that anymore at all.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's been filtered through, like, you know, modern trends and in yeah. storytelling and stuff like that. But like this is the more like sort of pure distilled form of it.
Yeah.
The like you said, the more Looney Tunes sort of slapstick physical comedy aspect stuff that's kind of universal that we kind of strayed away from after yeah. a while. But like the whole like sort of harem thing kind of exploded after a while, and this one is kind of like what a lot of people point to as like kind of starting it.
Yeah, like, yeah, although like I think it's funny when girls hit Ataru and tell him he's a jackass. Like that's
because
he deserves it. Like, and she wrote that character to the point where he deserves it, and you kind of want to watch him get knocked around. Like,
yep.
And I love his loser otaku friends who just follow them around and fawn over Lum and get pissed off every time Ataru is like in the shot and stuff. Like, those are good jokes. Like, they're good characters, and like it stays funny. Like, it stays funny for a long time. And like the jokes themselves, as they repeat, become like old friends, and you're happy to see them when you watch one of the movies or when you watch like an OVA and you haven't seen the TV show in a while and they do one of those old jokes. It's nice. It's like it reminds you of it, and it's still a little funny, you know. Like, I don't know, I obviously had like going back through all this stuff and like watching some of the cartoons and reading the comics, I was like, man, this is so good. Like, it's so good. So I had a little bit of a thing with that. So I will say that I dramatically prefer the manga in all cases to the anime. It is universally better as manga, to the point where, like, I would say if you're going to go after this stuff, the anime is a fun and cool thing to look at after you've read the comics. But or if it's like, said, look, I just don't read comics, then all right, try and see if you can find the show somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I wish tough it to wasn't do. So severely out of print.
Yeah, Maison is really hard to find.
Oh, well, Maison especially, because like the last few like box sets of that anime were like you had to online order it only through like, I think, Right Stuff.
Yeah, I remember.
So like, good luck finding those, because every time I've seen them online, someone's like, I want $1,000 for these. And you're like, yeah. Nope.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty bad. So the comics are cheaper, and actually you can find them.
By far.
And it is a better experience. So, you know, I would recommend that.
Shorter. So that's
yes.
kind of
Maison's only 15 volumes, and you get the whole thing just in that shot. And, like, if you watch, like, the first episode of Maison Ikkoku, in the comics, it's, like, 3 pages until Kyoko shows up. In the yep. anime, it's like 10 minutes. That gives you a yep. good idea of like what you're in for as to how drawn out the anime is. And like, the anime also makes the story problems significantly worse, because Maison is fundamentally a story about two people taking 3 steps forward, 4 steps back. Actually, it's more like 2 steps forward, 10 steps back, over and 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 over again for 15 volumes worth of story. And, like, in the end, it's fucking frustrating, because I don't even think they say I love you to each other until, like, the very, 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 very end.
Yeah.
Right?
And the other thing that's kind of frustrating is I had a friend actually recently, well, I say recently, but it was, like, a few years ago, read Maison Ikkoku, and he got really mad at me. He was like, they could have solved every single problem with cell phones.
Sure, yeah.
And I was like, well, yeah, but back then, that yeah, wasn't an
I just
option.
Like it. I guess because I'm older and grew up with this stuff, that it's I accept it as a museum piece. Like it's a time. Mm-hmm. It's a period piece now.
It
if
is.
You read it now, you're reading a story that takes place in like 1988.
Yeah,
actually, I think it's like 1980.
Yeah, it's. I was gonna say actually, I think it was like
80. Yeah,
it has almost like a late 70s aesthetic.
Well, yeah, Lum's older than me. Lum's older than I am. Yeah. So like, you know, this stuff is getting pretty old. But yeah, the Maison is my number two favorite. But like that again, the comics, not really the anime. I like the anime. Like it has a really nice look to it in some cases, and like it's fun to watch it animated. But I don't think I would want to sit there and watch like the whole thing, and then that movie that is just a slog. Like, yeah.
Plus, I mean, could you imagine? Like, I knew anime clubs who watched, like, the whole of Maison.
Yeah, they did it in my anime club. I watched it that way then. I don't think I would go back to it.
It took so long.
Yeah. It took, like, years to get through it.
Yeah.
At anime club.
And if you came in late, it's like, oh, well, yeah, okay. I guess I'm screwed.
I remember watching the fan sub tapes at anime club, and then just getting the manga and being like, I'm just gonna go out to the courtyard and read this and get through like 75% more of the story in these 22 minutes, you know.
I mean, as much as I liked the anime, like it was kind of a slog to get through sometimes.
Yeah.
And
you're there for the atmosphere a lot of times. Like I like to put some of this stuff on in the background a little bit just as atmosphere if I'm working or whatever, because you don't really got to pay strict attention to it, especially if you've seen it before. But like, right. I really like the milieu of Maison and Lum, mm-hmm. both and how they feel and how they look. So they're good for that. But like just sitting there watch, like taking it seriously as a story and like, I'm going to get into this and watch this show. Maybe read the comics, you know?
Yeah. Ooh, good luck.
Yeah.
More power to you if you have enough stamina.
So those are my favorites, and I think they just will be forever, unless you make something else that's like, wow, I don't know. What is your favorite Takahashi work?
If gun to my head, if I had to pick one, I would probably say Maison is probably my number one, but just barely, because like I really, really, really love Urusei Yatsura. I mean, I really love Ranma.
I thought you were gonna go with Ranma, but it sounds like we have the same picks.
Yeah, I really love Ranma. I love it so much. But you know, as I've gotten older, I realize it's not a perfect series, and it has a lot of issues. Some of the jokes haven't aged very well. I mean, I still love it a lot. And I hold so much fondness for it. And the artwork is great. And I love so much about it. Like, the comedic timing is, like, really good. When it's there, it's, like, super, super good. But I just love all of those things about, like, Urusei Yatsura more, because they're a little tighter. It's a little better. It's aged a little bit better because it's a little bit... It has more of that timeless quality.
Yes. It's timeless. It's 70s, but in a timeless sort of a way. Like it isn't sort of gauche. You know? If people remember that word.
I mean, the last anime fest I went to, I was on staff and I was helping in a volunteer room, and we were randomly putting on anime for like some people had their kids in the room. And I put on one of the Urusei Yatsura movies. I can't remember which one. I think it was not the second.
Yeah, probably. I was about to say, you didn't put on a fucking Beautiful Dreamer, did you?
No.
Jeez.
The one where he turns into a hippo.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. Isn't that like...
I think that's the third.
Third one? Third, that's fourth. What I was going to say. Only You, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that one? No.
No, Only You's the first one.
That's the first one. The one that I was watching not long ago was Lum the Forever, which is sort of okay.
Yeah, the movies kind of range from like really good to like okay. But I put that one in because I was like, well, he turns into a hippo. It'll be cute and funny for the kids. And the kids totally ate it up. And then the adults ate it up. Like everyone was crowded around watching it going like, oh man, this takes me back. Like, oh, I haven't seen this in so long.
Yeah.
And it was so cool sitting there watching, like, the kids liked it, the adults liked it, like, literally everyone liked it.
There is something, like, profoundly comforting about those characters and seeing them interact with each other. Like, it's a little like if you read, like, a bunch of One Piece and you get really attached to those characters, and then you, like, wait a little while and then you see them all together again. That's a sort of Nakama feeling, right? You kind of feel that with the Lem characters. Like, when I was watching those episodes and there's a scene and Lem is standing there and Mendo's yelling at Ataru and a couple of the other side characters are standing around, a Cherry and everything, and I'm like, fuck! This is a good feeling. It feels very home. Like, I'm home, you know?
The
like,
gang's all here.
Yeah, it's the same feeling as, like, you know, going to Disneyland or whatever. Like, oh, I feel very at home here. Like, I'm very comfortable with this. This is, reminds me of the past, you know? Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's good shit. How do you feel about Beautiful Dreamer?
I really love Beautiful Dreamer.
But do you love it as a Lem thing or do you love it as a Mamoru Oshii movie?
I love it as both.
Really? Okay. Because I only like it. It's fine as a Mamoru Oshii movie, but it is totally among it, like the anime fans that I've known and everything, like it totally eclipses. Like when you bring up Lem and people bring up Beautiful Dreamer immediately, and then they only want to talk about Beautiful Dreamer, which is like not particularly indicative of Lem as a franchise or as a character or the series as a whole. Like it doesn't have the qualities of a standard Yuri Seatsura thing. And so like I kind of like, I like it and everything, but it always gets kind of a yeah sort of a reaction from me because that's all anybody ever talks about is Beautiful Dreamer. And like, it's just a Mamoru Oshii film. It's kind of like A Silent Voice is a Kyoto Animation movie before it's an adaptation of the manga A Silent Voice. And Beautiful Dreamer is a Mamoru Oshii movie before it is anything about Lem or any of that stuff.
True.
Like, and that's how I see it. And like, I'm one of these brave souls willing to admit that I find most of Oshii's work obtuse and dull. So Beautiful Dreamer is a little obtuse and dull for me in terms of what I'm looking for in a Lem thing.
Sure.
Which is, maybe that's a hot take. But I do love the movie.
I
do love that movie. I've seen it a lot. I've seen it a lot.
I know that I'm kind of an oddball when it comes to Beautiful Dreamer because that was actually the very first Yuri Seatsura thing I ever saw.
That's a lot of people, though. Like, I would say that's most people.
And,
who have any familiarity with it.
And I was like, this is really interesting and really cool, and I want to know more about these. And then I got into the manga, and I was like, this is really different.
Yeah.
The thing I saw, but in a cool way, and I really like it. So,
yeah, they're both good.
They're both good. So I wasn't mad or anything. I mean, I understand the people who saw it and got mad because it's not an Yuri Seatsura thing, which I totally will admit that.
I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah.
Not a soul. All I hear is like, that's the best thing. Watch that. We don't need to discuss anything else about Lem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that is my experience. Like, the people that I've spoken to, that's what they would talk up.
I know on the Japanese side of things, I know there were a lot of fans who were like super mad that movie was so wildly different.
Yeah, which stands to reason.
Yeah, which I mean is understandable because it's like you said, it's a very Oshii thing. And I guess I'm one of those people that I can be like, well, it's an Oshii thing and I really like it. But I also kind of like it as a Yuri Seatsura thing because, like,
totally.
A lot of the movies kind of are not the same tone as the show.
Yeah.
So I kind of separate them as just like this weird sort of non-canon thing because they're not really.
Yeah.
It's just like that was kind of cool to watch, even though it has nothing to do with the TV show. It's kind of like when you see like a comic book movie, like it's not going to be like the comic books. It's going
to
be,
that's a good point. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
Whatever the director wants it to be. So.
I think that's a good point. Like I said, I love Beautiful Dreamer. It's always like whenever that comes up, it's always like, oh yeah. And Lem. Oh yeah. Beautiful Dreamer. Yeah. Yeah. All right. But have you seen any of the hundreds of other episodes or movies that exist for this or read the amazing comics? Like the comics are way better than any of the anime. Like,
get ready to hear a lot more about that movie because it's coming out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm definitely going to get that.
I am super excited about that because out of all of them, I think that would be the one that was the one that I was like, do I buy the import of this because I really, really want it? And then Discotheque picked it up. So I was like, oh, sweet. That saves me $50.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while. So I'm excited to see it again. here when that comes out. I admit, like, and I'm really happy to have it. I'm happy to have any piece of that franchise on Blu-ray at all. But, yeah, like, what I would really want is a box set of all the films. Like, one box.
Yeah, I really would love that, too. Because, I mean, a lot of people didn't really like some of the other movies.
Yeah, but, you know,
they're so well animated. Well, most of them.
Yeah, like, well, they all have cool stuff in them. Even if you just turn it on and don't pay much attention to it, you'll catch some really cool-looking stuff. And, like, in terms of classic anime, a lot of it is really nicely animated. And those were not minor productions back in the day. It would just be cool to have a box set. I understand if people, well, I don't like number four. Okay, but you get them all, and you can have the one that you know. And then I beg you, Discotech, to try and license little chunks. Like, if I had that, but none of the TV show, all right, fine. You know, or if you put out all the OVAs on one set, okay, fine. At least I have something. You know, that would be cool. But I don't only want Beautiful Dreamer, you know?
Same. I'm really hoping that, like, if enough people buy it, they'll be like, hey, look, guys, these people in America want more Ernest the Yatsura. Please license more for us.
So your favorites are the same as mine, just kind of swapped.
Yeah.
Which is totally understandable. But you would put Ranma as, like, a close third.
Yeah, it would be a close third. I mean, Mazen was... When I first read it as, like, a really young teenager, I was like, "And this is okay." But then I came back to it, like, when I was an older teen, and I was like, "This really speaks to me." I really kind of empathized with Godai, because I was like, I understand the feelings that he's going through and all this stuff. I was like, even though he's a dude, I was like, I understand this completely, what he's going through, his feelings, all this stuff. And then when I returned to it, when I moved across country and I sold off a bunch of my stuff, and then I had to rebuy Maze and Ikkoku all over again, which was like a whole thing. When I finally got all of it again, I reread it for the first time in like years. And I was like, oh, now I empathize with Kyoko. So as I grew, like, it sort of grew with me. So it has this really special place in my heart. And,
man,
like,
yeah, that's cool.
Just every time I reread it, I'm just like, oh, it's like a big warm hug.
Yeah, like, I don't know, man. Like, I got so frustrated with Kyoko, like, during, and both of them, really, like, obviously both of them. I have a heart, like, I empathize with Godai and everything, but, like, I don't know, Kyoko, I always found her to be kind of fairly, it's sort of a frustratingly written character. And, like, I totally get what she's supposed to represent and, like, who she is supposed to be and all of that stuff. And you're absolutely right. Like, as I've gotten older, those feelings have subsided a lot. Like, how annoyed I am with Kyoko and her, you know, emotional constipation. But, like, they're both emotionally constipated anyway, so.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the frustration comes from both of them. But I think in the early days, I was a little bit more annoyed with Kyoko, and there's probably some latent sexism in that as well, and I'm willing to admit that.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm willing to admit that, of course. But that has obviously faded over the years, thankfully, as I have grown as a person. Now I think, like, I just kind of look at it as, like, this is, like, I do kind of want to go back and read the whole manga again. I'd have to go rebuy the whole damn thing, but that is kind of, I would like to go through it again, but it would take, I think the manga is kind of the way to go, as we've been saying.
Is not that hard.
Yeah.
In comparison to Inuyasha.
But I do want to talk about Ranma, just as a show. I would put it on my, like, here's the one that I really don't like very much, or, like, I just didn't cotton to it. And, like, I think the problem with Ranma for me is that I just don't think that it's a very funny sitcom. Like, the jokes are not particularly funny to me. I really hate that Shampoo character. Like, hate Shampoo. And it's pretty racist, it feels like. Shampoo feels racist to me. And I'm sure that there's some kind of reasoning behind it or whatever, but, like, that character is really not great.
Yeah, most of the Chinese characters in Ranma aren't portrayed as, like, the best.
Yeah, well, they talk like cavemen, and it's not cool. But beyond that, and you can throw that in the bin of cultural sensitivity or whatever. But mm-hmm. beyond that, I just don't think that I don't really like the characters. I don't think that the situation is really all that hilarious, and it leans on like so the earlier stuff. Like Lum might have 6 jokes, and it'll use 2 of those jokes in every episode.
Mm-hmm.
Ranma seems to have like 10 jokes, and it uses those 10 jokes in every episode, every single time. And that's the way the whole show is. And it gets hideously repetitive to the point where, like, I feel like most people, even back then, would tell me, like, only the first season is worth watching. And then after that, it is just repetitive as all hell, and they just repeat themselves over and over and over again. And I feel like that was actually fairly common sort of sentiment among people who had watched a ton of it and weren't totally in love with it. Was that, like, yeah, it gets super, super repetitive, and, like, it gets really, really dumb later, too. Like, the jokes get, the plots get, like, increasingly, like, absurdist and weird and, like, not necessarily, but not weird in a good way. Like, weird in, like, I'm out of ideas and I'm just gonna make this as manic as possible in order to cover for the fact that it's not very funny, you know? Like, it just mm-hmm. felt like that. And so, and the whole franchise kind of felt that way to me. And, like, like, you know, like a lot of like, here's my tits. Oh, you got distracted by my tits. And now that's the joke. And that's in like every like every episode.
Yeah, so, that was a joke that got used a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just kind of lame, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I will say that like after a certain point, I did like kind of have to force myself to finish watching it because I was just like.
Did you watch the whole show?
Back in the day, I did.
Wow.
That's a lot. Because I was just like, I gotta see how it ends. And then at the end, it's just so open-ended. You're like, that wasn't even really an ending.
It doesn't end. Yeah.
Like, that was like a non-ending. It doesn't help that like the animation quality starts dipping like really badly in the second half of it. Like, I think from like season 5 on, it just goes downhill like super, super badly. Which is sad because like Studio Dean used to do like some really amazing work, and then all of a sudden it was just like, you know, what happened? Like, I don't even know.
Yeah.
But I still really like those first couple of seasons. I think are pretty great, and I really love them. Like, I have the first couple of Blu-ray sets that Viz put out because those are probably my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And I really like the OVAs and the movies because they're really nicely animated.
They are.
And they're just kind of more of the same.
I really like... Okay, so that is one thing I love about Ranma is the color palette on the anime is really nice. And I really mm-hmm. like the glossy look on those movies. Mm-hmm. It's very sort of candy-colored glossy, and like it looks really good. Like back then, those were kind of like, oh man, this looks like... fucking anime, you know, like this yeah. is anime, you know.
Definitely.
But yeah, I feel you on that. I totally feel you on that. I don't know, just like if I gotta watch Ranma get hit in the head with a giant frying pan for saying something kind of rude one more time, it's like yep, there's the one girl who's really obsessed with money, and then there's the one girl like here's her character trait, you know. Ranma,
I feel like a lot of Ranma is like kind of a product of its time.
Absolutely.
And like you yeah. had to be sort of right place, right time to get into it, because I've tried showing it to like some younger fans before and they're just like, I do not get this. It is really weird and dumb.
Yeah. And kind of lame and old and like,
yeah, it feels old. Like, you know, the jokes feel old and I get that. I really do. You know, yeah. when I'm like, I really love Ranma, I preface it with, this is something I kind of grew up with.
Yeah, it's a museum piece showing you something from the past.
Yes. So it's not perfect. I mean, that's like, there's a ton of cartoons that I watched as a kid that like, if I went back and watched them, I'd be like, oh, this is garbage. But I still have a fondness for them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what Ranma is. Like, I genuinely like a lot of the characters. But like, I think a lot of it is like right place, right time. You know,
yeah,
like,
you had
I was
to be
exposed
there.
To it, like right when that would have been like the best time to expose me to it. Whereas, like we were saying before, like Urusei Yatsura and Meizan Nikoku are like a lot stronger and have aged a lot better.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. I don't want to rip on it too much. You know, in the middle of your segment that's supposed to talk about how good it is. But it always kind of struck me
totally,
as like
I totally get it. Like I had a lot of friends who were just like, "Oh, I'm not into that," and I was like, "Yeah, it's fine."
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let's take some of these Twitter questions here. We got a lot of them, so let's get on.
Yeah, I was excited. Thanks for asking so many questions, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Jeff Tevitz wants to know, where does the Mermaid Saga lie in your Rumic rankings? Did Takahashi succeed as a horror mangaka? So obviously she did succeed, mm-hmm. like by the basic rubric of what is success. Like she did very well with that stuff, it seems.
Yeah.
I don't particularly care for her horror manga. My taste is a little different when it comes to horror. Like, you know, like I said, you know, more of a Junji Ito guy, and Takahashi's stuff always seemed like her illustration style just didn't really strike me as a horror type of thing, and I feel like that's kind of borne out in those comics. What about you?
They rank kind of up there for me. I would say it's probably somewhere under Ranma for me. I really enjoy them, but I think a lot of that comes from, like I said, like I like horror and I like a lot of different kind of horror. So I was just like, oh, this is interesting and cool. Like I can dig this. It's not like my favorite thing. She actually worked as an assistant for Kazuo Umetsu when she was younger, before she got her start.
Mm.
And I think that was kind of where she was like, I want to try some horror manga.
Right.
And if you look at some of her stuff, I think it's more reminiscent of his work than, like, say, like you were saying, like Junji Ito. So I think if you don't like that style of horror, you might not like it, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of other horror manga that you can get into.
Yeah, there's a ton of it. So, all right. Rachel Togas asks, why do you think Viz hasn't kept all of her manga in print? Well, it's lots of volumes and they're old and only people like us want to buy them. So, yep, that's
yeah,
why.
Plus there's like the whole premise of like, if something is longer than so many volumes, it's kind of a gamble to put out.
Yeah, they'd have to decide to take a risk, or there would be like some massive influx of like fan enthusiasm that they felt like guaranteed sales. Like that's what it would kind of take, it feels like. Or maybe like if they did a Kickstarter, I would definitely be part of that. I mean, maybe I don't want to give them any ideas because I don't like it when giant companies do Kickstarters. But like,
True. If
they're like, look, we will sell you translated tankobon of every single volume of Urusei Yatsura, give us $500 or whatever they want. You know, I'd consider it. I would definitely consider it.
I would definitely consider that. Yeah. I know that they have a really good relationship with the Japanese publisher, because like, isn't Viz like an arm of that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, so I don't know if it's an issue of like, you know, maybe they want more money to put it out here, but every time they do one of those like, hey, Viz has a survey, go fill out the survey, I will be like, Meizan Nikoku, Urusei Yatsura, please.
Yeah. I mean,
like
even
every single
like,
time.
Well, but here's the other thing. Digitally, like, I mean, you could do it digitally.
I heard somewhere that, like, some reason she didn't like the idea of.
Of course, that is always how it goes.
But I mean, I could be mistaken. That was just a thing I heard.
That's the most obvious and direct, like, obviously what's happening. Because, like, usually older mangaka are like, they don't want their stuff to go digital.
They do ebooks of Ranma, so I'm like, I'm not sure.
Some of it, yeah. Some of it they do.
So I'm just like, I mean, I think it's just basically, like, who knows, like, who would buy this except old people like us?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I would buy it. I would definitely buy it. I mean, they've released it in Japan, like, 50 different ways.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think a few years ago, they released, like, a color version of Urusei Yatsura.
Yeah, they did.
And I was just like, ugh, I would buy all of these. All of them.
It's limited fan base over here.
Yeah.
Invalid Name wants to know, are there previous mangaka that Takahashi drew inspiration from? I'm not an expert on her, like, influences or, like, her as an artist, but she did study under Koike, right?
Right. She studied under Koike, who did Lone Wolf and Cub and Crying Freeman and, like, a million other things.
Yeah.
And like I said, she was an assistant to Umezu for a while before she really, like, started on her own. By name, she has mentioned Tezuka, Ryoichi Ikigami, yeah, and Fujio Akatsuka.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, like, well, thank you for having that ready to go.
I had to look it up because I was like, I know she's mentioned some influences, but, like, I couldn't. Those were the only ones I could concretely remember. She said she especially liked Ikigami's Spider-Man comics.
Hmm.
And I think she also said that she really enjoyed Parasite.
Yeah. Right. Huh. Interesting. Let's see here. I mean, so he also asked what artists today are clearly influenced by her. So, like, Takahashi's style was all over the place in the 80s and the 90s, and, like, a lot of mm-hmm. things looked like it, but it's gone out of style. So today, not as much, but people draw from her storytelling and her characters and jokes and everything, like, all the time. Like, it's very influential, but visually and less directly so now, it feels like, mm-hmm. but visually less so because the style is just very 80s and, like, it's just not in vogue anymore.
Yeah, and, like, her new style is like, how she draws now is not how she used to draw.
No, it's like a cleaned up kind of coloring book version of her old stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I dramatically prefer her old art.
I do too. I mean, I know it's natural when an artist draws for, like, a really, 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 really long time that their style is going to evolve a lot. But, like, how she's drawing now just isn't.
It feels sterile. It feels sterile.
Yeah.
Compared to the, like, kind of rough, like, very human stuff that she was drawing in the 80s and the 90s, Rinne looks like a coloring book to me. It looks extreme, mm-hmm. like, too polished, too clean, too sterile. It doesn't mm-hmm. really have the charm.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not, it doesn't have that charming sort of, like,
rough,
rounded look anymore. Like, yeah. She draws a lot more pointy now.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, it's not as appealing to me. I know that lots of actually American and, like, Western in general, like, artists and animators that are doing stuff now were super influenced by things like Ranma when yeah. they were younger, because, like, that was, like, a huge deal. Especially, like, I've seen so many female comic artists say, like, oh, I was so into Ranma when I was young, and I was super influenced by the fact that, like, all this cool manga was drawn by, like, a woman.
Mm.
And that really inspired me to, you know, become, like, a comic artist or a storyboarder or an animator. You know, I see it a lot. And it's kind of cool to see that, like, her influence was so massive, just not in Japan, but, like, in worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Land of Obscusion asks, did you like what Osamu Dezaki did for the £1 Gospel OVA? Jeez, I haven't seen that in, like, 20 oh, years. Man. And if so, would you like to have seen him direct another Takahashi work? So, like, I don't know that Dezaki's sensibilities are, like, all that perfect for Rumiko Takahashi's work.
Yeah, I mean, especially her comedic stuff.
Yeah, like I could see a Dezaki, like, Fire Tripper or something, you know, like,
yeah,
sure.
I was gonna say, like, maybe her more, like, slow-paced Rumic theater,
yeah,
Rumic
sure.
world stuff, like, I could totally see that, because I remember when I did see the £1 Gospel OAV, I remember, like, I'm not a super big fan of that story.
Not really, no.
But it looked really nice.
Yeah.
Like, it was really well animated. The direction was really good, of course. But because it's supposed to be a comedy, it felt kind of weird because his style doesn't really lend itself to comedy.
No, of course not. Yeah. He's Osamu Dezaki. Like,
yeah.
Watch any one of his other films and you'll be like, why did you get this guy to direct £1 Gospel?
Maybe he was just like, I'm up for a challenge.
Yeah, maybe.
But
it's,
like,
good. Like, it's interesting, but it's just not like, why did you adapt this material this way? It's just kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been interesting to see him do, like, maybe, like, Mermaid Saga, because
totally.
Like, every anime adaptation of that has been kind of like, ugh. Okay to bad.
Well, okay to bad, and like perceived, it feels like perceived as kind of boring or minor and like not worth really watching. Like, I've never had any of that recommended to me once, ever. No one ever says, like, you gotta see the anime Mermaid Scar. Like, nope. That's not a thing that happens.
Yeah, if it had been treated more of like a serious, like, horror thing, I could have I could see it doing much better than it ever did. But that TV series that they did, like, I think in the early 2000s, was just not good. It was really bad.
Yeah. All right. Someone with the username Lum Ron Mayasha wants to know, why do you think Rinne hasn't caught on like her other long-running series have? What qualities did her other series have that it lacks? I mean, I don't really know, but it's kind of hard for me to believe this. Like, Rinne's been running since 2009. It'll be a decade old in, like, a year and a half.
God.
Which is hard for me to believe because it has had no cultural impact on anime fandom. It feels like it's none. Like, no impact.
I never
no
see
impact.
Anyone talking about it. Like, hardly at all.
Yeah, and it's sold... Again, the circulation number is 3 million. Inuyasha was 45 million.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no push to, like, get that TV anime on TV or anything.
Well,
like,
no one watches it. Not that I can tell. Like, at least not here. Not. I mean, that's... Of course, people watch it, but not in
not
the numbers.
A lot.
Not in the numbers that were required to call it, like, a hit or something people care about. Like, it's just...
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what quality it lacks. To me, it seems like an extremely generic... mashup of ideas from Inuyasha and, like, a little bit before that, and it seems extremely safe and, like, too sterile and not very interesting, and, like, but it's been running for almost a decade, so it's hard to know, like, well, maybe I'm missing something, you know?
Yeah, there's not really as much charm. At least the little bit that I saw, I was like, this seems just really, like, flat. Like, there was just her spark that was usually there for other things just wasn't there. It felt kind of phoned in.
Yeah.
And it, which is weird to say because it's been going on for so long. Like, you've been phoning this in forever, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's kind of sad because, I mean, it just feels like she's running out of steam, basically, to me.
Of course, like, you get older, you've got a lot of books under your belt, you've been writing a long time, you just want to write something that's kind of easy, and hey, here you go, like, this is kind of a thing, right? Like, it's just a kind of a low-stakes sort of a job. That's sort of what it feels like.
I mean, at this point, I feel like whoever is buying it and watching it is mostly just the hardcore Takahashi fans.
Yeah, like, I am dedicated to this woman and her work. And
which,
that's,
I mean...
You know,
more power to you, because I love a lot of her work, but I just couldn't, do it.
Yeah. Grant the Thief wants to know, boy, I don't have an answer for this. What's your favorite piece of Takahashi art that does not appear in a manga? I mean, I couldn't tell you that off the top of my head.
Totally have an answer.
All right, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so a few years back, a bunch of artists did tributes for Gogo 13's anniversary.
Oh, shit.
And she drew this hilarious picture of Duke Torgo with Kotatsu Neko and Cherry, and they both have those, like, crazy Duke Torgo eyes.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I've seen this.
Yeah.
It's good shit.
It's so funny. I mean, every time I think about it, I just chuckle because it's hilarious. Yeah. It's just the silliest fucking thing.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, it took me a minute to think. I was like, because most of her art goes into a manga thing. Like, you don't see her do a lot of, like, just for funsies art.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember seeing that online as, like a whole bunch of artists did, like, stuff. And then hers was there. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. It's so funny.
That's cool. I'm going to have to go look for that again. All right. Same guy. Well, the Lum Rama guy from before. Also, while she is known for long-running series, she's drawn several one-shots and shorter works. What's your favorite of her short stories? I think I'm going to go with Fire Tripper. It's pretty good.
Yeah, Fire Tripper is basically, like, the thing that Inuyasha came from.
Yeah, But it's better as a 40-minute one shot. Like, that story is fine as a little one shot. I didn't need it to be 400 episodes. That's for damn sure.
Yeah,
what about
yeah.
you? What's your favorite?
Fire Troopers. Most of those Rumic theater, Rumic world stuff is pretty good. Like Fire Tripper, The Laughing Target, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I even
Laughing
I
Target. Kind of, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I even kind of like Maris the Super Gal because it's just so silly.
Maris the Chojo?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that since, Jesus, long time.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous thing, but, like, it's kind of fun just to be like, that was silly. But I think I would put Laughing Target and Fire Tripper up there a little higher, probably.
Cool. Stefan asks, do you have any general advice for people considering getting into Rama 1/2 for the first time? Yeah, sure. You know, get the first Blu-ray or get the first couple volumes of the manga. Don't buy more than that. And see how you do with that. And if you pick whichever one of those you like more, the comics or the anime, continue with that. But I don't think you need to do both.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
And I would recommend the manga just because, honestly, I think Takahashi's stuff is just way better in comics form. It just is.
Yeah, I think the comedic timing in the comic is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
I would also say, like, if you like the first season or the first couple books or whatever, the movies and the OVA are also really good.
Yeah.
And they're really nicely animated.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to that Viz box set because I've been like, come on, Viz, re-release those movies. I want them.
Yeah. All right. Last couple questions here. Let's see. Oh, Nancy from Viz wants stories about when she appeared at Anime Expo way back when. I did not get to participate in that at all. So, couldn't tell you.
Yeah,
but it sounds like fun.
I really wanted to, but there was no way I
fucking
could make it.
Anno Hideaki showed up at AX once, and I wasn't there for that either. That's
yeah,
some bullshit.
Yeah. And Clamp was there too one year. One
I was there for that. I was there for Clamp. And let me tell you.
Naoko Takeuchi was there one year.
Yep, she sure was.
And I never went to any of those, and I was really sad.
Well, now there's like 120,000 people at Anime Expo, so.
Yeah, now you couldn't pay me to go.
Oh, I bet we could pay you to go to AX.
Well, maybe.
I mean, if I said.
If I had some sort of press badge or something and I could just saunter in there, that would be great. But
you should get in touch. You know, we look for convention correspondents.
But as a regular attendee, like, oh, no.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, I have to set up, like, which panels I'm going to a long time in advance to make sure that I have to ask in advance, like, hey, can I get a seat at this thing? Because it's definitely going to fill, and I have to be at 10 things before it. You know, Expo is a nightmare now.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to it, but it's going to be
a circus.
Carl Olson, wait, that's not a question. It's just talking about those amazing photos with Rumiko Takahashi wearing a Def Jam recording sweatshirt. She looks great in that. Those photos are amazing if you haven't seen them.
Yes, those are my favorite pictures of her. I don't know how she got those, but it's great. It's so good.
Spunky Coon asks if we think a new Takahashi manga would succeed in the current climate. Well, she has one that's been running for a long time and is contemporary with everything else and competes with all of it just the same. And it turns out it's not doing that well. I would argue, yeah. Like, the question here is the style too outdated? And I would say, like, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, especially if you compare it to, there's so many artists out there now, like, competing in, like, Shonen Jump and, like, that whole,
yeah,
you know, space, and they, I don't want to say they work harder, but since they're younger, you know, they've had time to adapt to a more modern style. And so if you compare her stuff to these more modern artists, a lot of them look so different.
Yeah, Inuyasha did great, but it straddled time periods. It was like half a foot in the 90s, half a foot in the 2000s, and the show kind of looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of how it feels. But like once you got into the late 2000s, it's like, this looks old now. Like, Inuyasha looks old now.
Mm-hmm.
And her style looks old. They, like, we've just moved so far away from that potato-headed kind of round little faces and little cupid doll noses and lips and stuff. Like, we've just moved away from it, and like, anime just does not look like that anymore. Yeah. You know, I was in a book off a couple of weeks ago, and they had a How to Draw Manga book from 1998
that
does not look like manga. I mean, it looks like manga from 1998. Actually, it looks like manga from 1987. That was kind of the way the illustrations looked to me. They were like City Hunter-esque, which makes me think the 80s, of course, not
right,
not modern, but like, that's how much things have changed.
Yeah. It's really interesting when you compare, like, the stuff that's popular now looks wildly different to the stuff that was popular when you and I were younger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, considerably so.
Yeah, totally. Let's see. Dark Gold Game wants to know, has Rumiko ever done anything you thought was really deep? Nope.
Yeah, her forte isn't, like, really no. super deep stuff.
Yeah, that's not what she works with.
Yeah, she does comedy. She kind of dabbles in drama.
That's part of the reason people respond so much to Beautiful Dreamer, is because it is it has at least the pretense of much of a lot of meaning. And that sort of added to the Yurisei Hatsura mix is very unexpected, and so it takes people off guard, and you know, that's mm-hmm. a big part of the reason why the movie is so beloved, I think.
Yeah.
Is because it is the rare Takahashi thing that's based on a Takahashi thing and has loftier thematic goals than just making you laugh or making you cry.
Right.
So, yeah, no, there isn't a lot of deep stuff, but that's kind of the point.
Yeah. I don't settle down with like a Rumiko Takahashi manga and go like, I'm going to be blown away by all this philosophical stuff.
Yeah, nope. She's not that kind of author. Nick Hoffrog wants to know, do you think we'll get a remake or an update of any of her works? Like, yeah, they'll do it eventually, right? I mean, maybe. Who knows?
Like I said, like, if they ever did, like, that Osomatsu-san style reboot of Urusei Yatsura, I would be there for it. I would be glued to my seat, yeah. just waiting for it to come out.
Yeah. But take note, desperate anime producers.
make this thing that I say.
Do you have a studio that needs a production? Well, I would consider licensing, getting the ability to do Lump.
And the funny thing is, like, I went to Anime Fest last year, and there were a bunch of really great guests, including the voices of Lum and Ataru.
Really?
And the original character designer, Akemi Takada.
Oh, yeah, Takada. Man, her Lum stuff looks so good. Like,
it really does.
It looks great. I love Takada. I mean, everyone does. But, like, she did a lot of the character designs for, like, TV shows and stuff. And
she was actually the person that got to pick the design, the finalized anime design of Lum. She was the one who picked the... Okay, her hair is going to be green, and her tiger stripe bikini is going to be yellow.
Wow,
that was her. That was all her.
Man,
and they did a reading of a scene. The voice of Lum and the voice of Ataru. They did a reading of a scene from Beautiful Dreamer for us at the panel, and they sounded exactly the same. It was amazing, and I was just like, man, sign these people up to do a new Urusei Yatsura thing. They are ready.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you don't know who Akemi Takada is, go to Google Image Search and type in Akemi Takada watercolor as Akemi Takada illustrations or whatever. Take a look. It's like, people don't really illustrate anime characters like that anymore, but shit. Like, it's so
all of her
good.
Stuff was, like, so good.
Yeah.
I mean, she did stuff for Kimagure Orange Rose.
Well, that's what she's, like, most famous for, I think, is the KOR illustrations.
Yeah.
Those watercolors of Madoka standing in front of, like, the palm trees with the sunset yeah. is, like, shit. Like, so this good. Is, like, its own aesthetic. It's just amazing. Yeah.
It's really good. And her pat labor works are really
yeah.
good.
Yeah, Takata's the best.
And she did a lot of really, really nice Urusei Yatsura illustrations. I mean, she did the panel I went to, well, the second panel I went to, she, while she talked to us, she drew and watercolored a whole Lum image while she was talking to us. And that thing went for crazy money
at the can't imagine
auction. It went for like, like a few thousand dollars. It was crazy.
I was there at a very, very, very early anime expo where a signboard of Madoka went for in the five figures.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
It was five figures. It was. I remember we're sitting there watching that auction. That was back when those auctions were really exciting. Okay. 4GM wants to know, I remember from an old pod that Rumiko Takahashi Anthology sold really poorly. It did. Here in the States. Was that show actually any good? I never watched it. Did you ever watch that?
I watched some of it, and it wasn't that great. It was like, meh.
You also, you looked at the cover, and it's like, what is this about? Like, what is it? Is it like, it's a bunch of short stories, but it's like, it was never clear, like, what the hell is this, you know?
Yeah, they didn't really promote it very well. Because, like, if you just look at the cover, it's just, like, a bunch of random characters and you don't know who they are.
And they're, like, on a stage and there's, like, a curtain and, like, in front there's, like, a Takahashi-looking lady standing there and you're like, what? Oh, all right. Is this, like, a crossover thing? Like, those weird Tezuka things where they put all the characters into one situation? Or, like, no.
I think they just figured that, like, oh, Rumiko Takahashi, the name alone is going to sell things, right?
Nope.
It was kind of at the time where, like, not quite, like, it was just kind of...
Well, no, I mean, that would have been 2004-ish, like, Inuyasha would have been out, but if it didn't have Inuyasha in it, people weren't going to buy it. It's not like...
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of people at that time, it was starting to be like, you know, we knew that Rumiko Takahashi was like, you know, this manga queen and she was doing all these other things, but people who just got into Inuyasha, they didn't know her by name.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have passed by it and be like, I don't know what that is.
Also, Inuyasha had, like, Sesshomaru, and even Inuyasha himself, like, their designs were more modern than her other work. And so if you put those guys front and center, even, like, kind of Sango and Moroku, like, looked a little more modern than you would expect from a Takahashi production. But definitely the characters in the cover of the anthology show did not look... they didn't look the same.
No, they were adapting, like, her short stories, and a lot of those were really old.
Yeah,
so.
And you're not going to get... You're not, like, it's kind of hard to get, especially teens, to, like, look at something like that if it looks old.
Yeah.
Yellow Redfield wants to know, why do you think your work has generally had such strong appeal across gender lines? Well, the stories generally respect their female characters. In many cases.
I mean, she has her moments of, like, you know, oh, there's, like, an almost rape scene here and stuff like that. But they're usually handled way better. And generally, there's a lot of strong female characters in her works that aren't just, like, there to be, like, eye candy or whatnot. And a lot of them are main characters. I mean, like, you know, Inuyasha had Kagome, for better or for worse. So... I think that really appealed to not just, you know, male fans, but, you know, female fans. Like, I mean, even back when Urusei Yatsura and Meizu Nikoku were coming out, they were coming out in, you know, magazines for dudes, and women were buying them in droves.
Yeah.
Because it was just that appealing. Like, you know, she had a great sensibility of things that, like, well, a guy could appreciate this story. But also, I like this story.
Mm. Yeah. The stories themselves are not written purely as, like, escapism for men. So it has a broader appeal. Like, a lot of the jokes are still kind of, like, a little prosaic and stuff, but it's not, like, you know, these are stories that are, like, have universal appeal. They're not particularly, like, this is for men, and here's how we pander to men, so here's all the stuff that panders to men. Like, it's not really like that. So, but it's impossible to sit here and say that, like, oh, yeah, these are powerful works for women. Like, no, they're not. No, they aren't.
Yeah. Not really.
There's plenty of women in them that have, like, lots of agency and plenty of good female characters and stuff. And, like, I like a lot of the Tendo girls in Ranma because they have really strong personalities and they're really, they hold their own, and in manga where a lot of female characters are generally not really written that way.
Exactly.
So that is a unique kind of a thing. But yeah, I think there's a baseline respect for the female characters that women can pick up on, and the stories are also really compelling. So you know.
Yeah, and then Takahashi would be like, and I'll throw in some boobs here, so everyone's happy.
Yeah, but but like Takahashi nudity is not sexy at all.
No,
it's like
not
it's
really.
Like kind of it's kind of like they look like little naked Kewpie dolls. Like you know, like baby dolls, like with just like someone took the shirt off a baby doll that happens to have like kind of nipples on it a little bit. Like,
right.
That's kind
of
what it looks.
You know, the first time I saw nudity in like Ranma, I think I was like, oh gosh, like 15 or something.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
And
right.
I was like, oh, there's boobs in this comic.
Right. And when that when my friend handed me that Lum volume, I was like, whoa, there's nudity. There's nudity in this, and like had to hide it from the teacher. The idea of having to hide little those little like Lum boobs, little
know,
like point like this is ridiculous.
Ridiculous
like it's not erotic. Like Lum is like I've never particularly found Lum to be like sexy. I always thought she was cute, and like her design is very appealing and cute. But I never like lusted after Lum. Like she wasn't like a like that kind of a character. You know,
no.
Like that's and like actually none of her female characters are really written like that. The one who's exploited the most in terms of nudity is female Ranma.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, that's probably a big part of it. And Lum is never really like seriously taken advantage of.
No, not really.
You know, she's usually in control of things.
She's often portrayed as, like, sort of ditzy, but
yeah.
She has a lot of agency, and she can take care of herself for the most part.
Well, the minute she catches on, like, somebody will try and pull one over on her, but she will catch on and punish them very quickly. Like, that's
yeah.
kind of the thing. And
yeah, that's the whole joke.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my god, you're terrible.
Yeah, Daddy. Yeah, 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 yeah. So it's, yeah, yeah, which... When you explain that dynamic, there isn't anything inherently sexist in it, and it passes the smell test. Like, it doesn't track as sexist. It
right.
tracks as just a character. So, mm-hmm. yeah, all that shit works. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last question from CC Takato. Do you think they should finish the Ranma 1/2 anime like they did Inuyasha, the final act?
I want to say yes, but at the same time, I know it's not going to look like the old anime. So I'm hesitant about that because they did do like a random animation for I think it was the Rumiko Takahashi exhibition like years ago. They did like a one-off like new episode of one of the manga chapters. And I was really excited about that. And when it got fan subbed, I was like, oh, I'm going to see this. And then I was like, this doesn't look like Ranma, though. It, you know, I mean, all the characters were there, and it was done by one of the same character designers, and like all the voice actors were back, but it just, you know, it wasn't handled like the old show.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I had a lot of mixed feelings. I was like, I want to like this, but it just, I don't know. There's just, I don't know if they can capture that again. I mean, if they tried hard enough, maybe. Like, because that was in I want to say early to mid 2000s, so they might have still been using like really kind of crappy technology to animate
low res digipaint and shit. Yeah.
So maybe it could look better now if they tried to do a thing.
I would just want a throwback, though. Like, I would just want them to make it look as much as, like, the old show as possible, just with, like, smoother animation, maybe, like, more
yeah.
fluid, but
I
look
mean,
like the old show. Like,
that would be great if they could do that. I mean,
I feel like it wouldn't be the same. Like, so here's, like, speaking as a guy who lives in America and consumes all this stuff in English and doesn't live in Japan, the thing that I want more than a remake is just the old show to be available. Like, that's just make...
Yeah.
Give me the old show in high def so mm-hmm. I can watch those old movies on my big TV in high definition and enjoy the spectacular old 80s animation and designs and everything. And
right.
Give me that first. You know, then you can worry about a remake later, I guess. But like
at the same time, I also think like the ending to Ranma was kind of like a real open ending. So I don't even know if there would really be a point to go back and animate it now.
Well, the manga ends with, well, it looks like everything's okay, right? Like, that's pretty
yeah.
much it. Let's go back to school.
Yep.
Are they still in high school at the end of that?
I think so.
They don't get married. Do they get? They don't get married, right? Ranma and Akane don't get married.
No, they don't.
Wait, so what's like the fucking point?
So the final page is just them like looking at each other and smiling, and they're going off to school.
That's a Takahashi. That is a Takahashi ending.
Yeah,
that's basically the ending of Maison. Like, it's not that different from that, except that their relationship has moved forward. Although you're given none of that emotional, release. Like, you don't even see them. Do you? You see them kiss once, right? Do you see them kiss once?
I'm pretty sure.
In the manga? God, it's been so long. I know they kiss in that movie.
Yeah.
They kiss once in that movie and they, like, hold hands at the very end of it.
I mean, at the very end of Maison, at least, you know, they get married and, well, in the manga.
And all you ever see is Godai, like, looking at Kyoko. Like, there's no, like, real affection. Like, affection. Like, two people who love each other very much. Like, Maison's not really about that. It's not about that kind of relationship.
Well, if I recall, the end of the manga ends where they've gotten married and they've had a child, and then they take the baby.
Yes.
And they go back to Maison, and they're like, this is where your parents met. And it's kind of sweet, and I really liked that.
It's sweet.
It's a good place to end, but it's not like the big, sweeping, dramatic, romantic ending that... some people might want.
Like, well, it does the thing that Maison does the entire time, which is deny you the emotional satisfaction of seeing these two people be recognizably affectionate to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, in a way that you would recognize as like, oh, they seem to love each other very much. You know, like, they don't act like that at all. And like, Kyoko spends the entire thing, like, they're like seemingly about to get married, but like, Godai, like, does something stupid, and like the whole relationship gets thrown thrown into disarray and chaos, and like, maybe we're not going to be together anymore because of like one incident, and like, that's to keep the story going for a really long time. But that's what gets frustrating. Mm-hmm. Is like, do you love him or not? Pick one. Yeah. And then when you say it, like, you two should act like you're a couple, which was what became frustrating for me over time. It's like, where's the passion? None. There's none. But that's, you know, yeah. I don't know. I found that stuff frustrating. Did you ever see the live action movie with Jackie Chan as Godai?
No, I never did.
Yeah. It exists.
I heard it was really bad, so I never did.
Back in the old battle days, it floated around a lot in VHS fan sub circles. So, like, if you were doing one of the things where it's like, oh, if I get 6 tapes, the shipping is lower. Like, so you get 6 tapes instead of 5. So I got it that way and, like, popped it in once. And, like, I think it wasn't even, like, fully subbed. Like, or the subtitles were those really crappy, like, burned in, broken English kind of thing. But, yeah, it wasn't a... Yeah. Anyway, okay, that about wraps us up. Hey, listen, I can't, that was so much fun. I can't thank you enough for coming by and talking about and doing a little Takahashi with me. It's it was good. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. I mean, she's a favorite of mine, so it was just like, yes, I will do that. That will be fun.
All right. Well, we'll have you back on the show again soon. Thanks a lot, Don.
Yay, thank you.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Dawn for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Rate, YouTube, you know, all those places. And we really appreciate it if you leave a comment or a review. We'll see y'all next week.